Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It has been a week for the Milwaukee Brewers. A lot has happened. We haven't had a chance to really sort of pod about any of it. You had Craig Counsell giving his first press conference as a member of the Chicago Cubs. You had the Brewers officially announcing Pat Murphy as the next manager, the 20th person to be manager for the Milwaukee Brewers. There was a press conference there. You had the non-tender of Brandon Woodruff. You had a few other minor roster moves. Lots and lots going on. We obviously had to take some time at some point during this busy week to talk about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line is Kurt Hoag. He is the Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was out and about. He was at some of these events, and I don't really know where to start, Kurt, unless we wanted to go like chronologically. But how you doing? I guess there's been a lot going on. This is gonna be the busiest full week of Brewers news, I think, without any games that we've ever had.
I was talking to a Brewers player on the phone this last week, and he's like, "How's your off season?" And I was like, "What off season? Are you new here? Have you not been following anything? Are you not actually on the Brewers? Do you not have social media? Are you in the Himalayan mountains? What off season?" Anyway, JR, I'm excellent. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great, kind of, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how I should feel if I'm following this Milwaukee Brewers baseball team. I would say that the majority of what's happened has not been great, but there is, I guess, we got a little more illumination on some of this stuff. The last time we chatted, we kind of had a sense that they were going with Pat Murphy, that he was going to be the odds-on favorite to be the next manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. I think that was a surprise in the grand scheme of things, on the micro sense, continuity. You can't do much better than that in the microbrew sense. Yeah. But it sure seems like the players like him. You're talking about bringing back an enormous amount of the coaching staff from last year. So you could do worse if you're looking for continuity and looking to kind of not miss a beat. And that's where we're going. Pat Murphy, was briefly interim manager of the San Diego Padres. He has a long college coaching career. So he certainly has the experience, but I think what we said was we all thought he would end up going with Craig Counsell to Chicago. So let's start there. Then we'll go back in time a little bit to talk about what takeaways you had from Craig Counsell's press conference with the Chicago Cubs. But Pat Murphy is the guy. I guess I've kind of landed on this. There's just no new energy, which I think if you're going to lose your manager and have somebody new come in, I guess you kind of hope that there is a little bit of new energy. And I don't think you're going to get that when you bring everybody else back and just promote the bench coach. But that doesn't that's not an inherent problem. I mean, it could be an inherent good that you stick with what's working. This is a team that won 92 games last year. They have had success despite not having a lot of superstars in their lineup. So you kind of have to say that what they've been doing, at least it hasn't screwed things up. So why not stick with that formula with whatever's been working? What else are you thinking about Pat Murphy? And we'll talk about the press conference itself too, but like what strikes you about him? What makes him a good fit? What makes him, an eyebrow raising fit? Like where do you fall on all of this?
Yeah, I'll say this off the bat. It does not strike me as a rebuilding move. Like it's sort of almost the opposite of that, right? I don't think that, if that was the case and they were going to go an entirely, unusual direction relative to what this organization has done on the field over the last 7-8 years, I feel like you bring someone else in. This, like you said, is a continuity move. Within that, there's a bit of I don't want to say sticking it to Craig Counsell, but a bit of sticking it to Craig Counsell, you know what I mean?
Think about
those first comments that Mark Attanasio made, aside from he lost the community, which I would hate to. I would hate to lose the Brewers community. In all seriousness, never.
Yeah,
I don't want that to happen. Please.
That quote is the new bites of the apple. It was just a real. It's just a. It was a bad quote. It sounds awful.
It's not
you shouldn't
great,
have said
but
it.
I kind of like where it was coming from, though, which we don't need to get into all that. But anyway, the message was like, we've won not only because of Craig. We've won because of everything else here. Craig was a part of the winning, not the winning was because of Craig. And obviously you're not going to hire a guy to, like, send a message or stick it to someone, but they're going with the fact that they have won because of the entire group of people that have been in the organization, the players to the front office to the coaching staff, and they're going to try to stick with that as much as possible because it's been a winning formula, and bet that the guy that was closest to Craig Counsell will come the closest to replicating the impact that he had. Now, Pat Murphy's a different guy than Craig Counsell for sure. It's hard to replicate like this, like just all the little things that Counsell did really well for the organization. But I don't know, maybe some new blood, a little bit different style. Maybe it works. I'm not saying it's going to. Maybe it doesn't work. But you can sort of see what they're doing, and it's, you know, like sending this message that they've been putting out there this entire off season of continuity, and yeah, those are my long-winded off the bat thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I also like where that's coming from, because we've talked about this, and I think I've said this, I do believe Craig Counsell is at the top of his craft. If he's not the best manager in the big leagues, he's in the top few. I just think very highly of him. But even with that on, and I don't say this to disparage him or Pat Murphy, but like, we just do not have evidence that a manager makes that big of a difference, you know? And you can have the worst manager in baseball, but the best team, and you're still going to the playoffs, right? Like, it doesn't matter. The manager's going to screw it up a few times.
Right. Yes. This is why I would not have voted for Brian Snitker for manager of the year, because you and I, JR, could put that lineup out there every day.
And we would be very successful, be very celebrated, and we'd be making way more money. We would not be doing this podcast, Kurt. Does that concern you?
You and I would still probably do a podcast. I will commit to
you
that.
You think even if we're rich, even if we're filthy rich and leading teams to the playoffs?
Look, JR, we don't do this for the money. We
do it for the love.
We really
the love
don't
of
do it
love
for
of content.
Money.
We don't do it for the money at all. You're right. We would still do a podcast. Of course we would. Of course we would. It'd be very famous podcast.
The players would revolt against me because I have zero baseball experience, but like I would still
true.
Put their names in the lineup and they would go hit and I would receive manager of the year votes because of it.
Yeah. I mean, we're having fun with this, but like you kind of touch on that. Be a manager. The biggest job you have is being somebody who can relate to the players and communicate and be somebody who can work with the front office to sort of like either share or be a conduit for their vision, I guess you could say, but also just like be a dude that people can relate to and can work with. I mean, I think we remember Ken Maka as that being kind of the downfall there, even though he was somebody who had a lot of success elsewhere and seemed like kind of a decent fit, but just didn't seem to have, for whatever reason, that did not gel. That's not going to be a problem, or at least I don't think it's going to be a problem with Pat Murphy. This is a guy who is a very gregarious, very out there, loves to crack jokes. He's fiery. We've seen him get ejected from games. You know, we know he's got a little bit of a temper, but he's somebody that I think the players are going to feel like he has their back. He's not, you know, yes, different personality, but like, I guess I don't even know to what degree he sort of buys into modern baseball and will work with the front office, but I certainly don't have any reason to think he can't do that stuff. So on that sense, if you're just trying to check that box, I mean, yeah, of course that makes sense. It's a perfect fit in that sense.
The jokes, there'll be a lot of jokes. Things will be kept
a lot
very
of jokes.
Light.
Yes.
Very,
he definitely likes
light.
To have, I don't even think this is a bad thing, but like this guy has a lot more fun than Craig Counsell does with the media.
Yeah,
I think.
So Craig can mess with people and players, and he did mess with people
Absolutely.
And players, but Pat Murphy is a different level. People's tolerance levels for like humor and, you know, jabbing at people, like it varies. But for some people, like, it would probably be too much. Like, they would not be comfortable with the amount of like insults and ribbing that it's just like part of who he is. It generally works like in a baseball sense. That's just kind of how I don't know, baseball players are wired, or clubhouses are wired. I mean, hello, have you ever seen or talked to Rowdy Tellez?
We have to talk about Rowdy. That comes
Which
later. Sad.
more to come. I'm curious to see sort of like the management of it's the in-game stuff that I'm more interested in seeing for sure. How has he evolved to the modern game from his seat as a bench coach? He talked about his eyes have been opened to the modern game of baseball. I believe he used the word behooved. It behooves you to
Love
adapt
love a
with the
behoove.
game. So, I mean, I wasn't really going to go into that press conference looking for much of it, like much many takeaways. I feel like going into managerial press conferences looking for, answers that are going to dictate, what the future holds is probably a silly thing to do. But I think that was sort of notable, maybe that like the word behooves, mostly that the word behooves was used
Love it when behoove is the
in this
takeaway.
context.
You know what my takeaway was from that press conference? Three words for you, Kurt. Let's
LF,
f***ing go.
Oh wow. Do we swear on this podcast?
It's going to get bleeped out. No one will hear it. But you heard it, which is fun.
Okay.
We could talk about Ricky Weeks in a second, and I do want to. But first, I do want to finish the promise about rewinding a couple days earlier in the week, and that's Craig Counsell's press conference in Chicago with the Cubs. You went down there. You went there on Monday to take in the scenes of Craig Counsell putting on a Cubs jersey, saying it fits real nice, and I think Brewers fan skin crawling a little bit at all that. But just,
Yeah, that's wrong.
give me your
That's
overall impression. I
wrong.
mean, just
Okay,
tell me what you took away from that
so I'm
thing.
going to begin by talking about managerial press conferences as a whole again, like I just alluded to briefly. Like nothing big was going to come from this. Craig Counsell, I thought for the most part, like in terms of the point of the press conference, which was to be introduced as the Cubs manager, said all the right things. All the Cubs people in Chicago media were all over it. Yeah, he won the day, et cetera. Good for him. It's the
Sure, of
introductory
course.
managerial press conference. I do think though that over the couple of weeks now since this news came out, and now that everyone's talked and the dust has finally settled, I've started to lean one way on the who messed up here thing. I don't know if I would say I've picked a side exactly, but I think I've picked a side a little bit.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do.
Here's where you're going. Where you're going with this, I can sense it. You're saying that fans maybe should feel a little bit more justified in being disappointed that their manager took a job a little bit south of here.
Yes, I think that's it. I think I like tried to sit on the fence for a while. Hear both sides out. I think there's very valid arguments on every part of the equation here. But the big thing for fans is more so that Craig Counsell is managing the Cubs now. And
That's true, yes.
as someone who's from Milwaukee, who has said things like, I'm a brewer, I didn't choose this, I was born into this. Like those were all things that he said. He said he has a responsibility to baseball in this city. And then like th then you pair that sort of with the things that he said after he left, that he, at first he totally downplayed leaving Milwaukee for the Cubs, which I see like the from a business side of it, totally understand it. 8 mil is 8 mil. Managing the Cubs is probably a pretty good job, all things considered, in like the managerial realm. But you downplayed the emotions that would come of, going to the biggest rival in the division, and then acknowledged it a little more Monday. But then also, said there was no mental hurdle for him in signing from signing from the Brewers to the Cubs. I can absolutely see why people would be frustrated with him in this instance. Now, I don't think like there's more that's not being said here, maybe. Like, why did he feel for the last couple of years that he was probably done managing here. Like, you can't just ignore that part of it, ignore the fact that the Brewers weren't going to pay him. But yeah, it's all, as it all comes together, it's a little bit of like, I don't know. I thought it would like settle on me more, and maybe we will, get past the fact that Craig Counsell's managing the team's biggest rival. Maybe that will die down eventually, but like, I don't think it has yet. And that says something to me.
I think it doesn't surprise me that he didn't feel the rivalry maybe the way that the fans do. And I mean, even as I've...
Well, why?
You know, I don't...
Why?
Well, because think about what his job is. And that is to manage 162 games. Every day is a new challenge. It's such a grind. You can't tell me that they get fired up. I mean, they might say they do or pretend they do, but the Cubs games, especially in the more balanced schedule, there are fewer of them. The Cubs don't matter. They matter just as much as the Cardinals and the Reds and the Pirates. I'm not talking about it from a fan point of view. I'm talking about it from their point of view, from the players and the team personnel. They are not thinking about teams any differently. They're thinking about that day's pitcher, but not necessarily what the team represents, the name on the front of the jersey.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because I feel like if anyone should have an understanding of the passion that is in this rivalry, and certainly for Brewers fans, there is a passion there between Cubs fans overtaking their stadium. That is a big part of it that kind of fuels this, like, you know, this frustration complex that they have with the Cubs. Like, especially over the last like 7-8 years, Craig Counsell has been the manager for so much of this. There's game 163. He was the one who had the best quote in this, like, this recent version of the rivalry about the sunburns on the rain delay. there was the mini feud about the roof. I mean, like, all the times the Cubs come to Milwaukee and their fans overtake the ballpark, and it's a great baseball environment. He's from Milwaukee too. Like, he has been at the front and center of this pretty intense rivalry, like, all things considered, in the last decade. The best rival, like, the Cubs Brewers rivalry has had just as much real life standings ramifications as Yankees Red Sox. Maybe not as much bad blood, but like, it's...
I don't agree with that.
Both teams have been relevant a lot in the last 10 years.
Sure, but no more than the Cardinals have been. I mean, the Cardinals and Brewers have a decent rivalry, and I think it's probably about the same to the players and to the staff. I mean, for me, and I've said this before, like, I think the Cardinals are their biggest rival, because I think the Cardinals are the biggest threat year over year over year. Obviously, that's different year to year.
I think the reaction would be similar, though, if you went to the Cardinals.
100%. That's true.
I would be saying the same things here. Like, I get it from like a players and coaches side. Like, they don't always see things the same as fans do, and very rarely do they. And that's probably for the best. Like, this reaction that people are having would not have been the same if, like, I was thinking about this today. What if Brandon Woodruff signs with the Cubs? There, like, would make sense for him to do it if they want to offer him lots of money. But there would be a totally different reaction than there was to this, because, whether fair or not, I think players' free agency is viewed differently, and maybe that's wrong. Maybe that should not be the case.
Well, in this case, Brandon Woodruff was dumped by the Brewers.
Yes, Brandon Woodruff was, and maybe you could say Craig Counsell was dumped in a different way too, but...
Yeah, it's not the same.
Not the same. And also, Brandon Woodruff did not go to Whitefish Bay High School and, you know, portray himself.
Did not say, I'm a Brewer for life, essentially.
Essentially, yes. He did say he would want to be. He did say he'd want to stay here a long time, so maybe that would probably burn some people, but I can see the why the frustration is the way it is more and more as this has progressed. And I also see why, honestly, like, the Brewers won the PR spin on this. I thought there was no way in the world Craig Counsell would leave and they would win the PR spin. I thought it would be like damning, and they won it.
I agree with that.
Does that matter? Not really, I guess, but Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, they're lucky that he went to the Cubs and not the Mets, because the Mets, it's a totally different animal. It's like, oh, you hemorrhaged your best talent to a bigger market.
Yes,
and it's,
you weren't willing, you weren't willing to pay $1.5 million more per year. Whereas here, it's like, yeah, the onus isn't, which is interesting because we haven't talked so much about the money, and the money was a huge part of this.
It was, and I wanted to ask it in this term. So the way, you know, you asked the question of Mark Adonazio, if he would have been willing to match if he'd been given the opportunity to match. Of course, he wanted to emphasize that they weren't given a chance to match, but then you asked the question, well, were you gonna? And basically, you know, he didn't say no, but he also answered it in a way that makes you think, no, this was way out of what they were intending to pay for Craig Counsell or any manager. Even the Mets maybe weren't going to go that high. So this was obviously an astronomical amount of money relative to other managers, even though we can all, I think, disagree or agree on whether or not we think it's actual money that the ownership team couldn't afford to pay. But was there a scenario where he comes back? I mean, because I think a lot of people feel this way, that it's more than just the money. The money is a big deal. But if the Brewers had said, you know what, $8 million, let's match, would he have come back? Because I realize that's a gut feeling at this point. There's no obvious answer. I don't know if the answer is yes. I don't know if it's just about the $8 million price tag. I think there could be more about, you know, will this team go and then sign a bunch of free agents like the Cubs potentially could? You know, will this, I don't know. Is there a thing about market size or respect or whatever? Like, I don't know.
That's a tricky question to ask, because I think when you say if the Brewers had offered $8 million, you sort of think of it in like a context of, you know, like the day before Craig announced he was going to the Cubs, if they had offered $8 million. But the real question there is, like, they would have needed to offer it when? I think the answer is much, much earlier, because it was clear that they were not going to. I think it would have really thrown a wrench in the equation if suddenly at the very end they just upped their offer significantly. But I think because of sort of the way that things had gone down, over the last couple of years, like, I understand this is not the point of the hypothetical, but $8 million was not going to get put on the table. But if it had been on there 2 years ago, he's absolutely taking that deal. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe even at the beginning of this year, he takes it. But I think, yeah, it became a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket, forward by Craig Counsell. That, like, it all added up, and $5.5 million was not going to be enough. He wanted a new challenge, like that. Much like, as much as people do want to scoff at that line, that is very much what happened here. He wanted a new challenge. The thing is, it's not. I don't think this is a harder challenge.
No, he wanted a new situation.
I think Craig has sort of talked about it as if he hasn't come out and directly said harder challenge, but I think that's kind of been like the underlying tone of what he's saying. Is like new challenge equals harder challenge. But that's not true. That is absolutely not true.
I mean, and you said that. You asked that to him. What's harder than winning a World Series in the smallest market in baseball?
Yeah.
That's the hardest challenge he could have. If he wants a challenge, try that. And he's tried it. And I think, like you said, he wanted a new situation.
And that, I think
he wanted one where he could.
That's go ahead. That's part of. I didn't voice this in my previous dialogues about Craig and monologues on this episode of the pod, but like the challenge that he had talked about, the challenge of winning in Milwaukee as his challenge. So whether fair or not, it feels like you're sort of just opting out before, you know, ending that challenge, finishing it. And like he fell short. And then, instead of, you know, plugging along at it and, you know, really trying to make that happen, as he discussed and said it was so important to him, he went to Chicago. And it, like, all this added together is kind of why there's frustration.
For sure. And now this team lost its general manager, who was very successful, in David Stearns. I mean, obviously, you know, Matt Arnold worked closely with David Stearns, so it wasn't like they missed a beat or whatever, but there's a guy who went to New York. Now, a little bit different situation. He's going home, but Craig Counsell's leaving home, so you've lost the manager. I still think long-term, that looks pretty bad for the Milwaukee Brewers, that they had, some pretty elite talent behind the scenes. And it might, you know, like, I think it ultimately does come down to, do you want to pay for guys that, you know, do you want to give them the moon if they can't directly impact whether or not you win games because they are not hitting the baseball or pitching it? You know, I think that's still a big part of this question. But I do think ultimately long term, even though right now the PR war certainly, you know, it certainly looks like it looks worse for Craig than it does for the Brewers front office. I feel like long term, you do have to reckon with that, especially if this team is not good in 2024. And well, they let their talent go, you know. But then again, this team could still be good in 2024. We have talked about that. They could easily be in the exact same spot, slightly below or slightly above even. I doubt it, but it's possible, than where they were this past season. And then everything kind of gets washed away. It all gets forgotten. And then you say there is some connective tissue still in place that allowed them to be successful. So that's still very much, you know, part of, you know, this mystery. Before we leave Craig Counsell, was there anything else? Anything else that you took away that really stood out from that press conference?
We briefly touched on it. The 2 years, you know, a couple of years he was considering leaving, I was surprised at that answer. I guess maybe not so much surprised that that was the truth, but I was more surprised that he said the truth out loud.
Yeah.
Fully leaving his Brewers time in the past by saying things like that. And, but also, you know, on the rest of it, like he sort of danced around some things. You know, maybe some frustrations that did exist under the surface in Milwaukee, never addressed those, but sort of touched around the, you know, the issues just enough to make you wonder, okay, he's frustrated for a couple of years with some things in Milwaukee. Talked about financial resources being a part of the job in Chicago, why he wanted to take it. Yeah, okay. Like you kind of have to piece some of the stuff together, but he's not just coming out and saying it. And I think if maybe it's just me, like not just wanting the full answer, like just come on, say it so we can know. Otherwise we got to kind of dance around it ourselves and figure out what's between the lines. And I'm not very good at reading between lines sometimes.
So Ricky Weeks is yes. going to be joining Pat Murphy on the bench. Ricky Weeks has been in the organization a couple years in a coaching capacity and kind of a coordinator, sort of organizational-wide coaching capacity. Obviously a longtime Brewers player, second baseman, former number two overall draft pick in the early 2000s. And now he will be on the bench as associate head coach, not just bench coach, associate head coach Ricky Weeks. Back very closely to the organization and somebody that we'll be seeing on a regular basis. This did catch me off guard a little bit. Not that it matters. I think there's so many titles, there's so many different guys. You know, it ends up being very collaborative and nothing really, you know, you don't really need to get too worked up about what the individual titles are, but it almost felt like a hedge to me a little bit. It's like, yeah, okay, we're going to match the old school thinker, Pat Murphy, the guy who's been around a while, with one of the up-and-coming, you know, an up-and-coming star in our organization, somebody who's got a lot of ties here, and we're going to put them together and see what kind of, you know, alchemy that produces. I thought that was super interesting. I think that's good on the PR front, quite honestly, for the Brewers to sort of have that young and old dynamic or the former player dynamic, you know, a guy that everybody kind of has this natural affinity for because of his time with the Brewers already. But interesting stuff. And it sounds like he was kind of the star of that press conference when Pat Murphy and Weeks were introduced together. So so talk to me about your thoughts on Ricky Weeks as associate manager.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really care about who wins the press conference and these sort of things. But with Ricky, it was a little different, right? Because we haven't seen him in any sort of coaching role at all. So I was curious to kind of see what you could glean from maybe his, like how he carries himself or what he thinks about the job. And for sure, his attitude about it and the intensity stands out. Like that's going to be what we see in the dugout, in the clubhouse. Like that's going to rub off on players. He's got a lot to do in terms of catching up to what it's like to be a coach at the big league level. You know, you're dealing with a lot of new things thrown at you, but I mean, this is a guy that doesn't have a ton of coaching experience, but he seems like a guy who's going to be able to handle it. He's going to walk in the room and have the respect of the guys in that clubhouse. I think he's only going to further gain their respect throughout the year. I'm curious to find out a little more of like how he views the game, how he views the modern game. In what areas he's able to help the team, like on the player development side, maybe that's part of it too, because he's got that player development background. Like, how is he at getting info across to players? How is he at in his communication? Because there's just so many things that are part of this job that we just don't know. But the first impression, of just the straight intensity that he has is going to be a good thing for this club. Who knows if he's got manager material? We'll find out. But I mean, a lot of the best managers in the game, this is kind of the approach that they took. It's the same path that the Brewers took with Craig Council, basically. So, we kind of had heard about how Craig Council was being sort of groomed for the manager job. Obviously, that was the case because they handed it right to him. There was no search or anything, no interim manager. After they fired Ron Reneke, gave it right to Craig. A little bit different here, but not a ton different, because they straight up not only handed Ricky Weeks a bench coach position, but JR, he's associate manager.
I think it's very similar overall. Like, there were, I guess, rumblings that they were interviewing other guys. Don Mattingly was the name that came up, but we know very little about the interviewing process. It feels like it was really just Pat Murphy's job to
Yeah, I
lose.
mean, think about it this way. Like, why did they float his name publicly at the GM meetings? That's not something the Brewers do. At first thought, I was like, is this a bluff or just something to like give him, give him some the respect that he deserves for his years in the organization? But no, it was probably like, hey, it was a message to Murph. Hey, we're serious about you. We're mentioning you in this press conference setting. Don't go off to Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. And Stephen Vogt, who was named Cleveland Guardians manager mere moments before Craig Counsell sort of indicated that he was going to Chicago. I do think Stephen Vogt would have been certainly somebody in the mix that they would have looked at.
Oh, no
But
doubt.
similar to Ricky Weeks, like, this is a guy who, like, his playing career, Stephen Vogt's playing career ended 2 years ago.
Yes.
2022. So, like, this guy has so little sort of coaching, managerial, whatever you want to call it, experience, but that he's getting right into that role. It's just the type of person he is. He's a leader, and I think that's what we're talking about here, is that they view Ricky Weeks as a leader and they want him in this position. I don't know if I see it as a, like, manager in waiting situation. I don't think there's, like, a term limit on what Pat Murphy is going to be doing as manager, but I do think that he would be one of the first guys they think of if something changes. I mean, it is also fair to point that Pat Murphy had a heart issue not that long ago, and he seems to be in perfectly fine health. It's just, you could see them wanting to hedge their bets a little bit in terms of,
I mean,
I think back to George Bamberger back in the day, who had to step away because his
I
health
do think
was an
people
issue.
are like there's a bit maybe too much assuming that Ricky's like the next man up guaranteed. Simply, I wouldn't go that far, because if this doesn't work out with Pat Murphy for whatever reason, A, Ricky Weeks would have been the bench coach on like some teams that underperformed or whatnot. But like also that would lead to two straight, if it was just handed to Ricky, it would lead to two straight situations in which they went in-house and didn't shop. Matt Arnold's not shopping the rest of the league, canvassing what's available. Not saying they wouldn't just go in-house twice in a row in a short period of time, but I just you think like at some point, right? If they had to go through this again, the in-house guy didn't work this time, you'd go to a different store. When Home
Broaden the
Depot doesn't do
search.
it for you go to
You go to
Menards, or
Lowe's.
usually for me it's the other way around. Menards doesn't do it for me, and then I have to go to Home Depot.
Not a Menards guy, and I feel
No,
bad about
neither am
that because
I. Neither
Menards
am
is
I.
very Wisconsin. I don't know what it is. It's just vibes. I don't love Home Depot by any means, but I
Yeah,
just
no, I. Th
Menards I struggle with.
this I feel like this is my. I've become Andrew Wagner on this tape, but like ever since I bought a home, and I'm not handy by any stretch of the imagination, but yeah, when I need something, I'm going to Home Depot.
Shouts to Andrew Wagner, our friend of the business, certainly the handiest among the sports journos in the Milwaukee market. But yeah, I you if I'm going there, it's because it's something small anyway, because I am useless when it comes to home improvement projects, so it doesn't really matter what my feelings are. I ain't doing anything major in these box
My
stores anyway.
daughter does like the light section at Menards better, though.
It's very pretty. Yeah, a lot
Yeah,
going
the
on
Home
there.
Depot lights don't do it for her.
Yeah, they kind of bury that in the back. They don't do the whole, like, we're going to have one corner of the store that's just, like, a North Star with overhead lights. Yeah, we're just going to, we're going to kind of hide it in the back. That's what Home Depot's deal is, but
She did cry at a dancing Grinch toy. They had some dancing, like, Christmas toys out, and there was a Santa, and she didn't love the Santa, so, like, all right, let's go to the Grinch, and then I played the Grinch, and she lost it. She was like, this is bad. You need to turn this off. I'm going to scream.
Yeah, she must not be a fan of the Grinch. She's a Christmas person, Christmas kid. Can't say the same. Me and the Grinch, we have a lot in common. Speaking of things that are Grinch-like, right before the holidays, a couple guys got non-tendered, and not a good segue.
Speaking of the Grinch, MLB arbitration.
Yes, let's get into the fun part of the season. Yes. There was no secret what was going to happen here, I don't think, with Brandon Woodruff. Just a terrible, terrible situation to be in with an injury that's probably going to keep him out of all next year. You know, the Brewers could have hoped he signed later and paid him a ton of money, but that would have been, you know, like 13, 14 million. Brewers aren't going to do that for the hope to have him back the following year. And again, it's still a question mark how healthy he would be even the following year coming off of a serious shoulder issue. Absolutely no guarantees there at all. And really hard to see a scenario where they would have tendered him a contract or figured out a way to do a deal of any kind. It just didn't feel like there was any real way to do that. Terrible loss for this team. Tremendous pitcher, tremendous dude. And, you know, you subtract that. It's one of the big things that made the Brewers special. I mean, it was one of the things that separated them from other teams was having a pitching staff that included Brandon Woodruff. Now, at the same time, he only pitched in 11 games last year. So you could argue, okay, well, this team was still good without him, and they could theoretically still do that again. But a really tough loss. They get nothing, you know, they don't get a trade for him. It's just, you just have to let him go. We could talk about Rowdy Tellez as well, and we will, I think, a little bit here in the decision to non-tender him as well. But I don't know. Was there any scenario you saw where this ended differently with Brandon Woodruff once the shoulder injury was in play? I mean, was there any way this could have ended that they could have done something different, I guess?
No. Literally, no.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The one thing that I don't – I every angle of this has sort of been discussed and talked about, except one thing I haven't seen, and that is the lack of a lack of incentive for him to agree to an extension with the Brewers.
Yeah.
Why would he do that? It just doesn't benefit him, especially if he knows he's going to be non-tendered. It just doesn't compute in my mind why, like, someone in his position would do that unless he's committed to being in Milwaukee above everything else. That's really the only thing I could think of. Are there any reasons you could think of him taking that extension? Because he's going to be a free agent. Like, he knows he's going to have an entire open market available to him. And that includes the Brewers. And if the Brewers come back with a competitive offer, he can take it and stay in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Or he can see what else is out there.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is that they're so worried about what that free agent market is going to look like coming off of shoulder surgery that he's worried the offers aren't going to be there. And then you take the deal now, because there's a chance that matches or exceeds what you're going to get on the open market, but that's a very pessimistic view of how this thing will shape up for Brandon Woodruff in a year from now.
The reaction when this news was coming down that he was getting non-tendered on Friday was kind of, I mean, from, like, nationally, this was sort of what we all expected. You have 29 other teams' fans scheming up how they can sign him to a two-year deal. You knew there was going to be a huge market for him, because it just doesn't happen very often that a pitcher of this caliber is going to be available. Now, there's risk associated with it, no doubt, but a pitcher of this caliber is going to be available on, like, this kind of deal in terms of dollar signs. Because it's not going to cost nearly as much as it would to sign Brandon Woodruff otherwise.
I mean, I think that's where I fall on it, is that the Brewers can't afford to take that risk, or at least don't believe they can take that risk. And other markets can. The New York Yankees could sign him today. No problem. Sure, it's a risk, but not one that they're going to worry about with the dollar signs that they'll be capable of throwing around. So that's frustrating, because that comes back to, oh, we're a small market and can't afford to pay guys.
Do you want me to touch on the difference between Brewers can't sign guys and the Brewers won't sign guys?
Sure.
I don't really want to go into that right now. I'll get in trouble.
Well, I mean, but this isn't obviously, this is much greater than what we're talking about. Oh, they should have, you know, maybe upped the ante for Craig Council a few million. Like, this is significantly, a significantly larger commitment, because it isn't even just the 2024 dollar amount of 13 million or 14 million or whatever. You know, then it's on top of that, if you do end up trying to get him onto a deal for 25, because of course they would. They wouldn't tender him if they didn't expect or strongly suspect they could sign him to a longer-term deal. What if that doesn't work out because of the shoulder issue? I mean, you would be hurting yourself at back-to-back years that way. It's just not a risk you can take. And I mean, pitchers, this is the thing with pitchers. When they are your currency, when you are relying on a great pitching staff, that can be a big trump card, but it can also open you up to situations where, you know, you're one tweak of the arm away from losing that guy all year long and losing the chance to trade him. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's just not the same level of risk as it is with position players.
And folks, you know, that is why you trade Corbin Burns, right?
100%. 100%. I think that's right. I don't think they will now. I just get the feeling.
I still think they do.
You still think they do? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I get the feeling they are going to run it back, essentially, because you imagine, okay, Woodruff is not available for most of the season. You still have Burns, Peralta, and maybe you can patch it together with Chris Hook being a big asset in that department. You know, you get a couple of free agents who are good. You get maybe Robert Gasser or Jacob Mizorowski on the big league team for part of the year, and they click right away. I mean, I think you could still make it work.
I don't disagree with you at all. On that front, I just, like we've talked about, I think they're in a good position with being able to do whatever the market dictates on Corbin Burns. I do think, too, like, to maybe put a bow on the Woodruff stuff, there are a lot of situations in which the Brewers can sign guys and should, but don't. I think this is an instance in which they didn't, and that might be wisest from not only a standpoint of how they operate, but, like, even if they operated in a different sense. Just because the risk associated with it is, like, this guy doesn't pitch, and you can't run that risk for, you know, the money that it's going to be. Who knows? Like, 2 years, 25 million or 20 million, which basically, you know, comes out to like a year in that money. Which for peak Brandon Woodruff, that's still a good deal, but. Shoulder surgeries and shoulder injuries, especially the second one he's had this year. That's no small thing, and just unfortunate for all parties.
Totally, he's just a lovely dude, incredible guy. He is going to be missed. He was really you know, at least presented to us. Just an awesome personality, and it's going to be definitely different without him. They also non-tendered Robbie Thellez, first baseman, who a couple years ago was kind of their most important offensive player, and just did not work out for him in 2023. He just could not get off the schneid. Some injuries were a big part of that. Of course, the freak injury in the outfield and at Great American Ballpark, which certainly set him back. But even before that, this just wasn't. It wasn't happening for him. He does not make hard contact. His profile has kind of been that even when he was at his best, even when he was mashing and had 35 home runs for the Brewers. You know, I feel like 2022, I kind of feel like, obviously I'm not a huge believer in clutch, but it sure felt like every home run he hit was somewhat clutch. It was in a big spot, and that is maybe an illusion that doesn't necessarily last year to year, and we just didn't see it this year. Same question, different stakes, but was there any scenario where you thought Rowdy would be back this season?
Yes, very small one in which the Brewers say, like, hey, we're not going to tender you here. Take this deal, you know, a year, 2 million or whatever, which would kind of also be a slap in the face too. Cause it would be a pay decrease. But maybe offer.
Yeah. It's
to
like
him.
A prove it.
And, you know, maybe they did offer it to him, a prove it deal. Cause you think about it, like if Rowdy Thellez was on a different team, I think he's the kind of guy the Brewers would look at, taking a flyer on, you know, as they tend to do, they acquire a lot of hitters whose numbers the year prior were bad. Yes. And hope that they get better. Does not always work out, JR, but, that's sort of the kind of player that they often take on. And I think, you know, maybe there's reason to believe Rowdy Thellez can still be a pretty good hitter. I just think there's like big approach things that need to be changed. He does not swing enough, does not hit the ball in the air enough for a guy who you know, is able to do damage when he hits it in the air. And in addition to the defense questions, which are big questions as well, this was kind of an obvious move for the Brewers to make. Yeah, you're just not going to pay 5.5 or 6 million or whatever for a guy who had a negative WAR last year. Although they will pay 1.5 to 2 million for a first baseman with negative WAR last year. In fact, they will give up prospects for him.
We'll talk about Jake Bowers in a second, but I guess it is somewhat related. I mean, now they don't have a clear-cut first baseman.
They're directly, you know, Carlos related in my mind.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about Jake Bowers. I know you're excited. Carlos Santana is obviously a free agent. He's not back, or at least not yet, and Rowdy's gone. They don't have a clear first baseman. I mean, I know you and I both love Tyler Black very dearly and would love to see him get some opportunities. I don't know if first base is exactly where you think it would be. I mean, third base is probably in the order of preference. You'd probably want that a little bit higher. So,
yeah,
I guess that would lead me to believe they think they're going to get a first baseman in free agency, or first base is just one of those positions where you don't really worry about acquiring a first baseman. You move someone like a Christian Yelich to that spot, or you have William Contreras play some of that spot if you have another catcher. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of ways to skin that cat. So I guess I don't know if they'd be necessarily fishing for a first baseman, but I could be convinced otherwise. Or maybe Jake Bowers is the guy, Kurt. I don't know. You tell me.
That you cannot go into this year with Jake Bowers as the guy.
No one's. They're not going to do that. That's insanity.
He simply cannot. I know his AAA numbers over like 3 weeks were pretty good, but he was bad with the Yankees. His career numbers are bad. He's never had a league average OPS. Like in AAA between 21 and 22, he hit what, like 190? Like this is a guy who has an interesting prospect pedigree, but also that was 6 years ago. Like he was a top prospect when I was living in Wilmer, Minnesota, when I was in college, or when I was in college too. The Brewers see something in him. I don't see it. Maybe, you know, maybe he flashes. There's no such thing as a bad depth signing, but I don't get it.
Now you we've talked about this acquisition, and this is one of I think three minor league deals that the Brewers have done. They have parted with some, I would say, fringe to like below top 30 level prospects. Jay Savina was involved. Robert Moore is a guy that maybe you know, he was I think there was for a time this year he was probably the best player on the Timber Rattlers in single A.
Timber Rattlers, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, the Timber Rattlers, this is when they didn't have a lot of prospects on the team. So, yeah. I mean, I like Robert Moore. He's cool. He's a second baseman, undersized.
I liked the trade for the second baseman from the Phillies. I thought that was a good deal. They kind of sold, not sold high, but they sold while there's still some name value on Moore and Mendez, Henry Mendez, who are two guys that I think like the name recognition is beats their likely production at this rate. There's just big questions with both players for sure. And I like the power bat they got from the Phillies in that deal. But I don't love giving up Jay Savina for Jake Bowers. I just, especially if, you know, I mean, you kind of have to give Jake Bowers a shot to make it, you know, this deal worth it. But I'm not sure what he provides to the organization that, like, you look at a minor league signing wouldn't do. You know, like Luke Voigt signed a minor league deal. They ended up putting him on the roster. But how is this guy at this point better than what Luke Voigt was going to offer you when you got him on a minor league deal? Like, there's always these first baseman types that are available on minor league deals. Instead, the Brewers are now committed to paying this, you know, this first baseman guaranteed money in arbitration. He has no minor league options. In theory, you'd think that means that he's going to get a serious look at first base, and I think that makes your team worse.
Sure.
Just given the whole track record. When you could, like, who knows, maybe they go sign a player like Rhys Hoskins, but I do not have reason to believe, based on precedent, that they will sign Rhys Hoskins.
Oh my gosh. Brewers, blow us all out of the water. Sign Rhys Hoskins, match.
Yeah, I could look really stupid for a lot of reasons on this.
Well, I mean, and first of all, Oliver Dunn, we haven't actually said his name, the guy from the Phillies, yes, the power hitting, left-handed guy. Oliver Dunn is the infielder that they picked up in one of these minor deals. I guess, like, I mean, these minor fringe deals happen every year, right? You know, shortly before the Rule 5 draft, involving some guys that probably aren't going to be protected anyway. So, like, I don't know I don't feel anything about this trade because I just don't think it's going to matter. But I guess what I'm hearing you say that the concern here is that the Brewers might actually view him as an option, as the guy that they think of as a first baseman here.
I don't think we go into the year with him being the only guy at first base, but...
Well, no, of course not. But the fact that he could be the case.
But I don't love the process of it, I think. I think that's what it sort of boils down to. And I'm of the belief that the Brewers should try to acquire good hitters. And there's still a lot of time to do it, and they likely will. But Jake Bowers does not classify as a good hitter. And I don't have a ton of reason based off past precedent, like I said, to just, like, at this point, know that someone else is going to be brought in for first base. Also, like, can we talk about Keston Hira?
Yeah, why not? This is our podcast. We should talk about Keston Hira every week. Oh, we already do. Look at that. Let's talk about him some more.
It's been like 6 weeks, so I've got to collect my checks.
Said his name a couple times.
From the Keston Hira content agency.
Keston Hira could have been your first baseman, right?
What is the difference between... Yeah, no, like, seriously, you did not give Keston Hira a single look last year when you were already paying him $2.whatever million. And then he's gone. Obviously, that relationship came to an end. His track record is certainly better than Jake Bowers. His profile is certainly more intriguing than Jake Bowers.
Talk to me about defense. What's the defense situation?
Can
Jake Bowers play defense?
I guess he probably a little bit better than Keston Hira for sure. But but Keston Hira does not have a -1 career WAR, although it's not a ton higher. Maybe we're picking at straws here, but like, you gave up Jace Avina for this guy when he was going to get non-tendered.
Yes,
Jake Bowers was getting non-tendered.
Jace Avina is a top like 40 prospect.
Into Jace Avina. I don't think I'm not sure it ever works out for him in the major leagues. But like, there's plus I and plus power there that is intriguing enough for me.
Sure.
To make it worth mentioning that you gave this guy for him.
I think we should just assume at this point that they are going after guys who can play defense and the offense be damned to some degree. I mean, obviously they would prefer to have guys who could do both, but, and again, I haven't done any deep diving on this guy to know really to what degree he's a difference maker defensively, but this is how they built their team. Like, they are interested in guys who are defense. And we're going to try to get the most passable amount of offense you can get out of them while still being really quality defense. That seems to be kind of how they're rolling because seems to work and B, it's cheap.
He looks like he's a passable first baseman, not good in the outfield, which doesn't surprise me. Not a lot of guys that, you know, kind of get thrust in the outfield from first base are actually good. And with that, you know, I've decided I've talked about Jake Bowers too much for this podcast.
We have, for sure.
I'm sorry for what I've done.
I think, to put a bow on our guy Keston, I still think that they will regret not giving Keston a shot more than they will regret releasing Brandon Woodruff at this point and releasing Rowdy Tellez at this point. I think that will be the thing that burns them the most. That's probably not even that, you know, controversial to say. I could be wrong though. You know, it's possible that his strikeout rate just and inability to play defense just keeps him out of the big leagues, or at least out of a regular role in the big leagues. But I don't know, man, the guy mashes. He just mashes, and you don't have a lot of mashers. So it's weird to me that they didn't just give the masher a shot and figure out the defense on the back end, but that's not their process at this point.
Yeah, I have nothing more to add. I've said it all.
Well, have we said it all? Trying to think if there are any... I don't think there's much more to say. The free agency kind of started in earnest on Sunday with the Phillies re-signing starting pitcher Aaron Nola to a really lucrative 7-year deal. This is still very much the part of the season where the Brewers are not going to be involved. The contracts that are going to be offered are outrageous. And even if it's worth it for the first few years, it's hard to justify. I mean, Aaron Nola is a very nice pitcher, and sure, it would be great to have him. Don't know if the Brewers or any team really wants to get involved on those price points, but I wonder if they'll be a little more aggressive in the starting pitching market this year because they don't have Woodruff. Obviously, again, last year they also mostly didn't have Woodruff and they were fine. But they also did have Wade Miley, which they don't at the current moment. They don't have him now. And I could see them at some point wanting to find an upgrade over like an Adrian Hauser. So I don't know how you look at it, if you think this team will be, you know, whatever counts as more aggressive than what they usually are. That's not saying a whole lot, I suppose. But what do you think? What do you think about free agency here, Kurt? Is this the year they go? I can't even say the words. That they surprise us and spend a whole bunch of money?
No.
No, it's not.
There probably is some money in the budget, right? Like if you're assuming the payroll is on par with where it's been in previous years, they've cut a lot. Mark Canha's gone, Woodruff's gone. Even with Burns, I think it's somewhere probably between like 85 to 90 million, which leaves you, you know, some nice pocket change to spend on a roster that I think if you spend a little, you know, in wise spots, can still be a competitive roster. The thing I do think about this team is there's a lot of variance. It's going to be hard to peg down exactly what they are. Just because they're going to be relying so much on young players even more than last year. And the young players that they're relying on from last year, I don't think we know a ton of exactly like what to expect from them. Oh, my gosh. Can you hear my dog snoring?
No, I can't hear your dog
snoring. Oh, it's loud. I'm surprised you didn't hear that. No. Anyway, speaking of dogs snoring, actually, I don't really know how to tie that.
Are you going
to
pull off a segue here? Because I'm going to be impressed.
Is there a joke you made about like rookies not hitting? Maybe that's it.
No, it can't be done. Backtrack.
No, it doesn't work. Speaking of the rookies, as I was saying, like the ones that were up last year, I don't think I can say with a ton more confidence what Bryce Terang's going to give you this year, what Joey Weimer's going to give you this year. Like not a whole lot more than I had last year at this time. And that's the year of them in the big league. So there's just so much unknown with these young players that are going to have such a big role. How healthy is Garrett Mitchell going to be? Does Sal Frelick have another level he can hit on offense? And we won't know that until who knows at what point in the year. And that's going to make it really hard to peg down what the 2024 Brewers will be.
Yeah, I don't think Sal Frelick was the best case scenario by any means as a rookie when he got here, but he's not going to be all that different. I mean, he's going to be somebody who probably, you know, we saw that has a good contact tool, but that doesn't mean he's going to pound the ball into the corners. You know, it doesn't mean he's going to hit a ton of home runs. Obviously great defensive talent as well, but yeah, you know, you're not looking at somebody who's going to take a leap forward to being somebody who carries a baseball team. And I don't know if you got any of the rookies in position to do that. With what they, you know, Tyler Black, I suppose, is a little bit of a mystery because you haven't seen him at the big league level yet. But again, that's not a guy that you expect to just come up to the big leagues and mash. And who knows when Jackson Chirio gets here. So yeah, this isn't a team with a lot of certainties in their lineup. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's kind of, it's William Contreras, Christian Yelich and Willy Adames, hopefully, well, Willy Adames, and then not much else that you can really, truly rely on.
So the Brewers were, kind of speaking to the rookie production here, the Brewers were fourth in plate appearances from rookies last year. They were sixth in WAR from rookies last year, which is pretty good. Especially, yeah, you know, when you have that many plate appearances, you'd like that much value. But they were 20th in WRC Plus among rookies. Like, it's just hard to crown the group of players that was up already when they combined for a 78 WRC Plus. That's very bad. And now there's a learning curve in baseball for sure. We don't know what next year is going to hold. The soup might be made different. Grandma's soup can taste different, even if it's the same recipe, as Craig Counsell said Monday in Chicago. But it's just a huge, I think it's a big jump to expect these guys to suddenly, you know, maybe be a combined 95 WRC plus. And that's sort of what the Brewers might need next year, depending on what this roster looks like. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. Maybe.
I will. You know, we often don't talk a lot about when we talk about their unwillingness to add offensive players. I do think sometimes we gloss over the William Contreras trade a little bit to that degree. I mean, they obviously, they did make that at least one big move last offseason to upgrade their offense, and it worked. He was their best offensive player. He got MVP votes. So I think they will have that move in them again. I don't expect them to commit highway robbery like they did with the Oakland Athletics in wrestling away William Contreras almost out of thin air. But I do think that there is a move in them that they're going, at least an attempt to dramatically improve this offense. I guess my curiosity would be, do they also try to do that with the pitching staff as well, knowing that they're going to be a little bit, you know, the margin for error is going to be a lot smaller than it was at least at this time last year or once they got to opening day, I guess, last year.
Yeah. Well, one more thing to add to the rookie discourse. Actually, I think Jackson Chourio is going to be really good. It's hard to ever thrust big expectations on rookies and, you know, and expect them to come through and produce. But boy, JR, I really think this guy's going to be good and special. And when you kind of factor him in the group of young players and rookies, it maybe changes the equation a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's having an unbelievable sort of postseason, offseason, whatever you call it, sort of this winter ball season. He's just continued, picked up right where he's left off. He has been tremendous, and can't wait to see him. Can't wait to see him at Triple A, if nothing else, but obviously with one eye on what he's going, if he's going to be on the big league team and or when he's going to be on the big league team in 2024. There were a couple other things. Craig Council did not win Manager of the Year. I think we thought he might. Skip Schumacher of the Miami Marlins gets that honor. That would have been my call, I think, if I were taking the whole picture into account. You know, Miami had been bad for many years, have really only been to one, like, true playoffs, if you don't count 2020, or I should say no true playoffs in the last two decades, and Skip Schumacher comes in first year with a team full of guys that I don't think really are that great, managed to put together a playoff season, so that was very impressive. The ballpark stadium financing seems to be on track to get through. It's going to go to Governor Tony Evers' desk. He has pledged support for it. So it looks like the Brewers will in fact be here till 2050. We can stop worrying about the chillers and the whatever roof maintenance. That stuff is gonna be behind us, Kurt, because the Brewers will have the money that they need, for better or worse. They'll have the money they need to continue onward here through 2050. Anything else, Kurt?
I will miss the stadium discourse personally.
It was a good time. We had some laughs. I will say that, you know, if I look at it, try to take the widest view possible, there's no good way to have tried to do this. There's no graceful way to ask for money when you are already an organ, you know, when you have an owner who is worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and there's already a stadium contract, like, it's very messy already. There's no good way to do it. I think it actually probably went as smoothly as it could have gone. They got out in front of it. Yes, some of the PR stuff and some of the they maybe could have stood to talk a little less about it, maybe, because some of the things they said were kind of funny. But I don't know. It was fine. It worked. Everybody's going to get what they want. Except for possibly some taxpayers, I suppose. Although, since it's all sales tax, I'm not sure people will even really think about it much over the course of the next 15 years. But we'll find out. It's going to come up again. It's not the type of thing that just, you know, goes away. There's going to be something new that they need money for, and certainly within our lifetime still. So everybody can get excited about that down the line.
Got to keep the beer cold.
Got to keep the beer cold. It's you know how it is when the freezer breaks down. Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away into the ether?
Can we end this with a bang? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Ooh, I like being on the
JR,
spot.
JR, would you go cover a team in Chicago for a 45% salary increase? Like, would you go work for the Chicago paper?
For a 45% salary increase?
Yep.
I'm going to be honest with you, Kurt. I'm... This probably speaks to the whole amount of money that I make, which is not going to blow anybody away. I don't think I would. I don't think I would. I don't like Chicago at all. It's not just a personal distaste. No, it is actually quite a bit of personal distaste.
Sounds like a personal distaste.
I don't like driving around. I would never want to pay what those poor people pay for, like, studio apartments. It is extremely frustrating to be in Chicago for me. I don't know.
Family reasons, right? Like, legitimate.
I mean, yeah, I'd have to put kids in different schools. Like, yeah. I probably wouldn't, to be quite honest with you. ultimately I'd have to like look at the balance sheet here and see if that's just insanity on my part, but that's not something I'm eager to say yes to. I'll say that.
Okay. Noted.
Probably I would, because money talks in the end. You know, at the end of the day, I probably would be talked into it, of course. I mean, come on. I'm not trying to take a high road here. I just really hate Chicago. The place sucks.
Wow.
Jeez. It sucks.
I love Chicago, but I don't think I'd live in Chicago.
You know what sucks? Their pizza. Terrible.
What?
It's so bad. Oh God.
No. What? Hold on.
Give me Detroit pizza every day of the week. Detroit because I'll die. Good.
But I just had deep dish last week.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I love deep dish pizza.
I don't. You have to eat it with a fork. I hate that.
So.
Gross.
Oh,
it's
my
disgusting.
Goodness. Oh, no.
It's bad. I hate the traffic. The traffic really sucks.
Yeah, the traffic's an issue. But what in the... JR, you can't dislike deep dish pizza.
I don't. I love deep dish pizza. That's not deep dish pizza. It's lasagna. It's a mess. I can't handle it.
This is worse than your I don't like burgers and brats.
Cased meats. Yeah, that's... I don't know what to tell you. I put so much crap in my body that it's not like I'm missing out on high caloric intake. I just I'm picky about my calories. That's all.
You might as well be picky about the junk you eat.
That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Kurt, it's been a joy. It's been a pleasure. We will. I don't know again when we're gonna have another one of these, but presumably there'll be news at some point, so we'll have to dive back in, so you can expect to hear from us some more here in this off season. In the meantime, check out our Bucks. There should be a new episode of the Bucks Point Forward podcast this week for your Thanksgiving pleasure, and if we won't hear from you again, so have a good holiday, have a good Thanksgiving, we'll talk to you after that. Kurt, thank you for joining us.
Toodaloo.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to take an adventure with rugged capability and commanding style. Check out the Honda Ridgeline, Pilot, Passport, or CRV. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 1.99% APR on a 2025 Ridgeline or a 3.99% APR on a 2025 Pilot, 2026 Passport, or 2025 CRV.
See dealer for financing details.